Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. Week 15 recap show, including Monday Night Football breakdown. But before we get to all that stuff, plenty of look ahead lines. Movie Review Monday is back. And of course, we share some of our thoughts, some good, some not so good, on what we saw transpire over the weekend. I am, of course, Todd Furman, your fearless leader, and joined by the man who does the heavy lifting around here each and every week, Payne Insider.
The recap could be about 38 seconds long here. It was a total shit weekend.
I mean, you know, every now and again, people that are in those traditional 9-to-5s, they talk about, you know, Sunday night comes around, you go through this malaise, these doldrums, oh, I don't want to go into the office. That's kind of how I felt waking up this morning going, good fuck, I'm not sure I want to talk about all these games and some of the carnage that was our betting weekend.
It was ugly. Saturday was ugly. Yesterday wasn't much better. It has been a grind this season, to say the least. And
I think grind might not even be a strong enough word. You know, I was sending a text to my old man yesterday going back and forth. He's going, you boys having a little problem sustaining some of the momentum. I said, 1 week up, 1 week down, giveth and take it right back.
It's been a mental battle this year. I think that's probably the best way to put it. But you start to kind of poke around. You start talking to a lot of the sharper guys and you're looking at the carnage and everyone's having a tough season. We've had just a slew of favorites throughout, what was that, like week 7 to 13? So at this stage, it sounds like anything in the black's a positive.
Yeah, you see what you can. And I mean, you've been in this business from a professional betting standpoint longer than I have. You know it goes through the ebbs and flows. And I think for a lot of the folks out there, I mean, I draw the ire every week. I have to go through the pros and Joes exercise on social media. I put the Browns out there and people go, how could you be a pro if you bet the Browns every week? Value is value is value, and oftentimes, or I shouldn't say oftentimes, sometimes those bets don't get you to the window.
Ooh, man, is Kaiser bad. God, is he bad.
I'm still trying to figure out who he's throwing to in the game that's 27-10, and of course, I had to glue myself to the set to see if there is a silver lining for the Browns. No idea who he's throwing to. There's nothing but purple jerseys in the back of the end zone. I mean, this organization is an absolute train wreck right now.
I don't know what to make of it. The new GM comes in. He's throwing everyone under the bus that used to be there, basically. Their past GM, he's saying no one got a fair shake. So it sounds like Hugh's going to get another year. There is talent here. You just have to stick to a game plan, one of them, whatever it is, and continue on with it. I thought the talent was starting to... At least
we'd seen flashes. We'd seen flashes of what that offense could be with Corey Coleman and Josh Gordon getting back on the field.
Absolutely. And Duke Johnson in 2017, the way the running back position is played, he's a lot to handle out of the backfield, catching the ball. There is some talent there. Defensively, you started to acquire some talent. Greg Williams is a blitzing machine, so he's put them in vulnerable situations in the back half to a secondary that's not very good. But they did a great job through about 12, 13 weeks of stopping the run. They were one of the best run-stopping units in the NFL, so that was a huge improvement there. They couldn't stop the run at all the last few seasons. So they're acquiring the talent. Now they've bombed on some draft picks, but you're going to bomb when you have 300 of them the last few years. I think that's the way you had to go, and all of a sudden you're looking at potentially having, what is it, 2 picks in the first 6 this year? So you fire the guy who could potentially be lining you up in the spot to acquire some talent. I don't know. You just got to stick with one game plan and see it out for more than 2 years. That's the biggest thing here.
A lot of boomer bust for the Browns. And we'll get to a team that may be one of the NFL's quietest dumpster fires later on in the show as part of our big game breakdown. brought to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition. As we dive into the Falcons' road date tonight on Monday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Bucks. But Payne, aside from the Browns, I don't think a lot of our listeners want to hear us break down and dissect their lowly performance, although something does have to give this weekend. John Fox, winless in his career as head coach of the Bears, is a favorite. And the Browns, of course, winless this season at 0-14. But don't think that's a game that we're going to hit on look ahead lines. I'm pretty sure you're not going to get a deep dive on that game for Thursday. But let's get into some of the bigger games that had major impacts. And, of course, the NFL game of the year yesterday afternoon between the Steelers and Patriots. We dispute it. We debate it. It's going to be water cooler talk in New England and in Western Pennsylvania. Was it or was not a catch from Jesse James with a chance for the Pittsburgh Steelers to pull off one of the more improbable comebacks of the entire NFL season?
I thought you were going to go somewhere else there. It was 100% not a catch. And it's pretty clear if you have a grasp of the rule book. It's much different. I think the goal line, that line fooled everybody into thinking it was a touchdown. Right? If Jesse James is a running back, he has possession once he possesses it from the quarterback handing it off. And as soon as you cross the front part of the goal line, it's a touchdown. But when you're catching the ball, I mean, it's the same thing as him being 8 yards deep in the end zone. He's got to possess it all the way to the ground. And unfortunately, him trying to stretch out to cross the goal line is what caused the bobble once it went to the ground. But it's 100% the right call. Is it ticky-tack? Absolutely. But it is part of the new rule book. It's the Calvin Johnson rule. We've seen it a million times now. When you go to the ground, you have to be able to possess it. It's unfortunate, but it's the right call.
When you look at the a game like that and see something with so much on the line decided by that call, I mean, do we think the rule needs to be adjusted? Do we think there need to be tweaks? Or is this just the world we live in for the National Football League? Do we should all come to accept it? And realize, okay, this is how it's got to be done. The act of completing the catch, going all the way through the ground, securing the football. This is the world we live in 2018, 2017 and beyond. Obviously, it cost Dez Bryant and the Dallas Cowboys a few years ago in the playoffs. But this is, you know, kind of life and the reality of the modern NFL.
Yeah, it's 2017. This is what we're dealing with. You get a million replays a game. Now, this is what everyone wanted. They wanted these calls to be correct. And that's what we're getting. Now, it is funny that you say the modern NFL, because when you fast forward to Sunday Night Football and you have a referee using a sheet of paper to gauge whether it's a first down or not, that's something I would use to kind of slip notes to women in like middle school. And he's using that to figure out if the Dallas Cowboys acquired a first down. That doesn't show a lot of promising signs for the NFL moving forward. If we're doing that, there needs to be something implemented for first downs. Maybe it's a some type of gauge in the ball. But, you know, when you look at that call, it's an incomplete pass. I know everyone hates it. I know everyone hates the Patriots. It's easy to jump on that ship. We don't know what a catch is anymore. It's clear by the rules that that's not a catch. It's not a very difficult call either.
Okay, so we'll throw that part out. Let's talk about the loss of Antonio Brown and what that means to the Steelers. Obviously, two regular season games left, not in control of their own destiny as far as getting the number one seed in the AFC. If you believe the preliminary reports with a torn calf, he should be available for the postseason. But how much do you downgrade Pittsburgh's overall promise if he's not able to come back this season?
It's huge, obviously. At least a point to the point spread, without question, in that regard. There are capable weapons. Big Ben is going to learn to love Martavius Bryant, and he should after some of the catches he made this past game. The talent's there. Whatever Big Ben, whatever issue he has with Martavius, that needs to get ironed out quickly. He needs to go to him Sunday night, put his arm around him, say, hey, you're my guy, buddy. There's plenty of talent there, I think. Yeah, but when you lose Antonio Brown, it's worth something to the point spread. The key here for them is they have to win out. I know the schedule is pretty easy, but if you can win out, you at least lock up the number two seed. You get an extra bye week, which allows Antonio Brown to get healthy. They're saying partially torn calf. He's got a shot to make the playoffs. So it'd be a huge addition there, but they're strong at receiver.
What kind of grade do you give Mike Tomlin for his coaching performance yesterday against the Patriots?
I thought it was good.
I mean, are we surprised that he had to come out in the stupid zone for the opening drive and spot the Patriots 7 points in the first quarter?
Listen, when you talk about the entire game, I loved the call late. It was the 100% the right call to be aggressive, go for the win. I think you have to slay the dragon, so to speak, chop the Patriots' head off when you get a chance. And you rely on a guy like Big Ben. Obviously, he's a 14-year veteran. He's got two Super Bowl wins. He forced the ball in there. Once Eli, you're looking at Eli Rogers, like the fifth best weapon on offense. He's a Miami guy. He's like 5'9", 170 pounds, soaking wet. He's not going to go win you a battle going to get the ball. Big Ben needs to park that thing into the stands, and you kick your field goal, and you live to fight another day in overtime. You'd have momentum at that point. So I thought Tomlin made the right call there. Certainly coming out in zone was ridiculous. I mean, it shouldn't take you eight games and a full quarter to realize, hey, you can't zone the Patriots. You got to go man. You got to allow your stellar defensive line to get pressure on Tom Brady. When you play zone, Tom Brady's got three-step drop, five-yard pass. That's it. There's no pressure being, you don't allow your defensive line to get pressure on the quarterback. He switched to man, and it worked extremely well until the last drive. But throughout the course of that game, the Steelers' defense held up admirably, I thought.
Hat tip, by the way, to the Patriots. We know they make some of the best in-game adjustments featuring Rob Gronkowski throughout that second half. Clearly, the Steelers didn't have an answer. And I asked this question, and it's going to seem semi-obvious, especially to a lot of our listeners, Payne. Did we learn anything about New England in that comeback victory yesterday at Heinz Field?
Learn anything about them? No, I mean, they're good. This is what they do. I mean, they've been in this situation before. It's the anti-Chargers, right? Late in the game is when they're best. There's no panic whatsoever, and you nailed it. The halftime adjustments, they came out right in the half, scored the touchdown, made Gronk a bigger part of that game. When we talked on Thursday, I said, this is the guy, right? We know how fantastic the Steelers are against the tight ends this season, but without Shazier, one of the best cover linebackers in football, Gronk needs to be your main weapon. And in the second half, they featured him, as you alluded to, and they marched up and down the field somewhat. Now, the weather had some impact on that game. It was a lot more tight passing. It looked like that was the other thing, not to go back to Tomlin, but I thought he did a good job there. Playing keep away, playing a possession offense. Now, I know, again, the weather probably helped him make that decision. Antonio Brown going down probably helped him make that decision. But it's what we talked about. Get Bell the ball, possess the ball. They possess it for 35 minutes. So that was big there. But this is what the New England Patriots do. They win games they're not supposed to because they've been in the moment before. There's zero panic. At this point, though, there shouldn't be, right? You've already won five Super Bowls. A meaningless loss in the regular season isn't anything to them. Doesn't matter where they play. They're going to be favored. This is what they do.
Yeah, I mean, New England just finds ways to win. You mentioned Pittsburgh playing keep away. I think one of the more impressive drives in the game that didn't result in points, Pittsburgh finding a way to go 31 yards and take 7 minutes off the clock. So clearly they stuck to their game plan. It just wasn't enough to get them over the hump. From a game taking place in the Eastern time zone to a game in the afternoon we saw out west where a perennial power gets absolutely bludgeoned, for a lack of a better term. I mean, we talked about the Seahawks being decimated on defense, but Payne, decimated or not, I mean, they were gashed to the tune of 34 points. Todd Gurley picking up a 57-yard touchdown run on 3rd and 20 as if that wasn't the cherry on top of a tremendous first half from the Rams. But is this a symbolic passing of the torch from Seattle to the Rams within the NFC West?
It could be, yeah. I was looking at that yesterday. I can't remember who I was talking to, but I said something similar. And it had to do partly with not just the Rams and McVay and their young talent, but I said, man, San Francisco might be moving up in this division as well. So it could be a passing of the torch. We've kind of seen this with Seattle, though. They're getting older. This was the season that was kind of going to be their last run. There's holes on this roster when you go from paying Russell Wilson what he was making under his rookie contract, where everywhere else you could be loaded with talent once you decide to pay him that kind of money, and they should. There's going to be concessions other places on that roster. You talk about this game, and this is how confident we are in our ability. Right? After a bad weekend, we can still kind of talk like this. Anybody who puts you on Seattle, run for the hills. I mean, that is doing no work whatsoever. It's like the 3-minute handicap that this is a must win for the Seahawks and they're at home and they have experience. When you broke that game down, the current form, that there wasn't a single matchup advantage for Seattle in that game. And we talked about the phony scoreboard on Thursday's podcast, the first matchup where the Rams dominated them. And we talked about Seattle's defense. This is a bad defense. Quite frankly, this is one of the worst defenses in the NFL when you factor in Cam Chancellor out, Sherman out, KJ Wright out, and Bobby Wagner with the hamstring looked like he was at about 50% after the game. Many of those players, Earl Thomas said, hey, Wagner shouldn't even have played in this game. That's how much of a beast he is. He just wanted to be out there. But we talked about all those metrics. It was like the 24th best defense over the last month of the season. and then you add Wagner and KJ Wright a shell of themselves, or KJ Wright being out and Wagner a shell of himself, that defense is just absolutely horrific at this point. So we've already seen movement in this line, right? Up against, who are they playing, Dallas this week?
Yeah, a game where, you know, Dallas all of a sudden has, I don't want to say an inside track, but obviously a little bit more to play for, in my opinion, yeah. A de facto elimination game for these two teams.
This was also the sum of our weekend. We liked the Rams, didn't play them. That was an easy winner. We decided to put ourselves on the over, which we talked a little bit about on this podcast and said, hey, this over, we love the over, but the weather's coming in. And suddenly we're tracking it all day Sunday. About 2 hours before kick, we're like, this thing's shifted completely. And so we managed to find ourselves on the over, which we thought would have been pretty easy, but it required a safety late. That was kind of the sum of our weekend. It was a battle.
I mean, you get a Greg Zuerlein missed extra point. I kind of texted you, how's the score 40-7 right now and not, you know, going over the total? I'm like, all right, we're sitting on a push. We're okay. And then thinking, yeah, you got 15 plus minutes to try and get those extra points. If it wasn't for the safety, I mean, getting a push there,
this is what's funny.
Definitely would have been a microcosm of how things unfolded.
This is what's funny. I know the perception of this relationship, and I know the perception of me. I was actually Mr. Positive throughout the entire course of this game. I'm getting text messages, not just from you, but everybody else, like, Jesus Christ, we're gonna lose on a missed extra point. I said, listen, as soon as they got pinned back there, I said, this Seattle offensive line's been getting eaten alive all day. I think we may get a safety here. I didn't think it was going to be that variety. I thought it was going to be holding in the end zone. But I visualized the safety. I spoke it into existence, and there we were.
I'm still not sure that was intentional grounding, but either way, I'm not apologizing for one of the lone bright spots.
He was in the pocket, and it was 40 yards away from the closest receiver.
I'm not apologizing for one of the lone bright spots in an otherwise dark weekend. All right, Packers, Panthers, Payne. I'm not sure if you watch this game as closely as I did. Aaron Rodgers' return, clearly the headliner, but when you watch him out there, the deep ball wasn't a part of his arsenal. Three touchdown passes, but three interceptions. Obviously, Green Bay, I think they're mathematically eliminated from the postseason right now. I'm going to ask you this, because it's a game we'll probably talk about in greater detail once we know the starting quarterback situation. If you're Coach McCarthy and you're at the top of this Packers organization, are you trotting Rodgers out there for the Saturday night primetime game against the Vikings?
Well, I think the decision becomes easier based on this evening's results. So I think if Atlanta wins tonight, the Packers are officially eliminated. If Atlanta loses, I want to say the Packers' chances of making the playoffs are like 7%.
So you're saying there's a chance.
So it could change some things. Man, for me, and you texted me this yesterday that there were some rumblings that they may sit Aaron Rodgers. I would hate to be the guy that has to deliver that news. This is going to be a contentious conversation, I would think, between McCarthy and Rodgers. If this guy's battled his way back for 8 weeks and made drastic changes to his body that otherwise he probably wouldn't have made to come back for this little late season run, and I get he's not 100%, but you got an entire offseason. That injury would clearly heal if it was re-injured. It's going to be tough to sit him down, and I think he has to make the decision. I think if you're Mike McCarthy and you go to him and he says, hey, I'm playing, at this stage in his career, he's earned it, that you have to play him. That relationship, let's just say it's a working relationship. If McCarthy goes to him and says, hey, you're sitting, and Aaron Rodgers wants to play, that's just going to put a new strain in that relationship. I would hate to be McCarthy.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see a scenario for a competitor. Like you said, you don't come all the way back to play one game. And yeah, you may be out of the playoffs, but this game against the Vikings, clear a little bit more meaning for Aaron. If he has a chance to play spoiler against the team to put him on the sidelines, I'd love to see him out there. I think any chance you get to watch a superstar perform, even at 75, 80%, Rodgers with both arms tied behind his back gives them more of a puncher's chance than Brett Hundley does.
Oh, without question. And I think, you know, that's us kind of being greedy. If he wants to play, go out there and play. If he doesn't, no issues there. His performance, though, this past weekend, you watched the game in greater detail, but it's kind of what I expected. You know, he's extremely talented, obviously, and he made those flash plays, as we alluded to, but he's clearly not 100%, and there was a ton of rust on him, and he made some mistakes. And I think we'll probably see some of that again if he plays this weekend, right? And I know we were saying that he was in warmups for a lot of these primetime games the last few weeks, and he was throwing before the game, and it was like 40 or 50 yards, but it's different when you're moving around throwing or when there's pressure and you're throwing on the run. it looked like he had a limited throwing capability there. Like about 40, 50 yards is maybe his max distance. So he's about 80% healthy. So that's what
there are a couple throws that he probably makes when healthy, but you can't really expect him to come off the bench with 2 months of rust. And I feel like he just overestimated his ability to get the ball down the field. Chiefs Chargers, don't want to spend too much time on this game. I know we gave it out as our best investment of the weekend, and the Chargers, well, they were the same old Chargers. And you texted me probably, you know, when we watched the punt start kicking around and the Chargers weren't able to fall on it, the Chiefs drive the length of the field. You figure, all right, maybe Los Angeles finally over the hump in the start second half when they get a 13-10 lead in the most critical drive of the game. They extend on, you know, a defensive offsides and some other inadequacy. The Chargers are going to find ways to be the Chargers.
That was kind of the sum of the weekend. A lot of the ball rolling the other team's way. A lot of defensive touchdowns in some of the games we bet. But, you know, when you talk about the Chargers, it is what it is. Like, you don't know what you don't know. And the Chargers don't know how to close out tight ball games. And I hate to play Monday morning quarterback. It's part of our evaluation process when you're looking at yards per play and trying to find phony scores. And when we talk about them on this podcast, and I cringe when we do this. By no means would I have ever bet the Chiefs in that spot. But sometimes, you know, you can have all the metrics line up, the matchup advantages and angles, but it comes down to me to having an unbiased eye. And that was the one thing that I was hesitant about in that game. And I, you know, the Chargers have beaten nobody this year. Nobody. Their best win is Dallas without Zeke and Sean Lee. And you look at that four-game win streak, and the games were all blowouts. They trailed, I think they threw up the stat on Saturday night that they had trailed for less than two total minutes in those four games. So there was no pressure there. We didn't see them have to close out a tight ball game. And I don't want to go sour grapes, but, you know, it's the Chargers. It's 13-10. They're leading well into the third quarter. And what happens? You see it's just a slew of injuries. Corey Legit goes down. Denzel Perryman goes down. The starting safety Wilson goes down. The entire core middle of that defense. And all of a sudden, Kansas City can start running the ball. And that's what changed the game. So, hey, it's going to happen. It's why you can't, you know, long term, you can have the best information in the world. You can put on all the work. You can have all the matchups advantages, the metrics advantages. Three guys go down on a defense, it changes that game. And that's why, you know, you're shooting for 55, 56, 57, 58%. That's it. I mean, this is the reality.
You need a little bit of luck on your side in this business. As you said, no matter what you have going for you information-wise or getting the best of the number, you need a few of those breaks to work out the way you'd like. You know, Payne, on a quicker note here before we move on to some of the look-ahead numbers, Vikings clinched the division. I think what was lost in that game, Teddy Bridgewater sees his first live game action in an eternity. Of course, he does throw an interception. Congrats to the Jacksonville Jaguars back in the playoffs for the first time in 10 years. You get Blake Bortles and Keelan Cole kind of on the same page. And you mentioned it, the San Francisco 49ers, a late season surge, probably decimating and destroying any potential value we're going to have in a win total of futures.
Yeah, let's see where the market opens next year for San Francisco. But certainly everyone knows about the Jimmy G stock at this point. And they've won 4 of 5. But, you know, you got to temper some expectations. I think, you know, those wins, Giants, Bears, Texans, you got the most overrated team in football, the Tennessee Titans. So I think this will be a good test for Jimmy G this week. Let's see if he's up to the task against the Jaguars. That's an interesting matchup that I'm sure we may touch on. I'm not really sure. But the Jaguars, young team, tasting some success for the first time, traveling across the country now. So this will be a fun matchup. That secondary, the defensive line getting pressure on Jimmy G. Right now, he's completing 69% of his passes in a 49ers uniform, and that's with limited talent around him. So let's see when he starts to get a talent, but this will be a fun matchup to watch. Bortles, you said? I mean, he's the man right now, and I've been kind of hinting at this for about a month now. You throw on the film, he is a different quarterback. I don't know what happened. Sometimes with these young guys, the light comes on. I would think it's extremely difficult walking into a locker room with 53 other dudes and you're the weak link and they're all looking at you funny. And it means you spend extra time watching film, probably trying to gain a rapport with some of your receivers after practice. What we're seeing right now from Blake Bortles, if this continues, this is a viable Super Bowl contender. And I've said that for a long time now. And you look at this game right here, 11 yards per pass attempt, successful in 53% of his passes. League average is 44%. He was perfect on his deep passes, 3 for 3 on throws 20 plus yards in the air. When he's getting time now, he has been absolutely fantastic for the last 4 weeks. He completed 88% of his passes this week when he had no pressure. So, and for the Vikings, we know what they are. They're very good. Case Keenum has been fantastic. I know they lost last week, but one of the toughest scheduling spots of the season. They clinched the NFC North. There's still an ability there with Philadelphia and Foles to potentially have the number one seed. Could be a letdown spot this week, but when you start to look at the division and you start to look at the NFC just in general, there's three teams behind them with 10 wins, so I don't think you can take your foot off the pedal here if you're the Vikings.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the jumbled up mess it is the NFC, I think it'll be interesting to watch unfold over the next 2 weeks. Not for necessarily teams playing their way in, but to see how teams end up getting shuffled out as far as seeding and knowing the value of getting one of those buys. On to some of the look-ahead numbers, Payne, and we do have an NFL game on Saturday. Not sure it's be called must-see TV with the Baltimore Ravens playing host to the Indianapolis Colts. Your look-ahead number here from Westgate last week had the Ravens listed as a 10-point favorite. Current number at betonline.ag, Baltimore, 13.5-point chalk. Do you feel this move is warranted given the current form of these two teams?
Ooh, man, the Colts are tough to bet now. I get it. Now that this is Saturday, it's the standalone game. It makes some sense. 13.5 is a lot to lay for a Ravens offense that's averaging like 4.6 yards per play offensively. They have improved some the last few weeks. You'll have to check the status of Jeremy Maclin. No, he left the Browns game early with a knee injury. It's obvious with another dud Colts performance in the second half, Pagano is incapable of making adjustments. So if you did love the Colts, maybe you're looking first half so you avoid that. Or maybe this is what's tough figuring out if you did like the Colts, how you would play it, because there's also some familiarity there with Pagano. He was with Baltimore from 2008 through 2011, so I doubt they're going to want to run it up on the guy. And this feels like a game where the Ravens just need to go out and win, so the game plan could be a little more conservative. So I'm certainly not running to lay it with the Ravens at this point.
Yeah. Ravens on the outside looking in right now in the AFC, but all they'll need is a Bills loss, and the Bills double-digit dogs this weekend against New England to try and get back in the thick of things. You'd have to think if the Ravens win each of their next two games, they'll get into the AFC playoff picture. Lions and Bengals. I know we've had nothing but poor things to say about the Lions pretty much all season long. Payne, your look-ahead number here from Westgate had this game listed as a pick. As I look at the screen right now, I see the market starting to take off in the direction of the Lions' way. This number at betonline.ag, 3.5-4 on the open, now trending towards 5. Some interesting dynamics here in play for both teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where we'd like to go with this, but with this game.
Fire away.
In general, this time of year, what you're going to be looking for and how you can find extreme value is having the market overcompensate for the must win. And how you're going to do that is find teams with added motivation that the market might not think has that motivation. Now, certainly, you know, you look at some of these games, you get a team like the Jets, they haven't played for anything all year, but they're playing hard. And that's evident to see. So sometimes when they're facing a team that has, you know, playoffs are on the line, you're going to get an inflated number. Now, with a game like this, there could be some underlying factors here that aren't obvious to the naked eye that say, hey, maybe Cincinnati has something to play for here. And there could be some extra value in a game like the Bengals. We'll see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where this number heads. You mentioned the Chargers and Jets. I know we talked about the Chargers and their net performance against Kansas City. This is clearly a team right now. I don't want to say playing out the stretch, but you do have to worry about where they are from a mindset standpoint. Your look-ahead number from Westgate had the Chargers as a 10.5-point chalk for their second trip this season to MetLife Stadium. This number down to 7 at betonline.ag. Do we feel like the market's overcompensated for what the Jets did in their loss against the Saints on Sunday?
It's possible. And you kind of hit the nail on the head there. This could be a tough loss for the Chargers to overcome. But you start to look at this and you can't feel sorry for yourself. You're one game back of Buffalo, who has the sixth seed with two games to go. You own the tiebreaker over the Bills. So there shouldn't be any quit from Los Angeles, but you never know. And for the Jets, again, as I alluded to, they've given effort all season long. They did it again against the Saints. Now, why I haven't run to bet this is Bryce Petty scares the daylights out of me, okay?
He's not very good.
No, he's not. And it's actually, this is funny, when I was talking to a couple guys last week, and although you've taken me off track here, by the way, but all the guys...
I'm not sure what track you are on I've taken you off track.
Well, here we go. You're taking me off track a little bit here. I'm going on to a little tangent, but... You know, last week all the news might
be because you have the TV on in the background. You're watching highlights from yesterday. Don't blame me.
No, I actually haven't looked up yet. Although we're watching the Blaine train, 16 for 41 on the screen. That's a tough one. Almost
hell
got
of an
the
effort
cover.
Out of Blaine taking things on the highway when you can't beat the Redskins after the Skins only gained 218 total yards of offense.
Failed to cover by half point there. Blaine Gabbert, 16 of 41. train derailed. Shit, now I'm really off. Oh, okay. Bryce Petty. So when you talk about the Jets, everyone last week was talking about the downgrade from Wentz to Foles. And actually the bigger downgrade, simply because of the backup quarterback, the bigger downgrade was Jets going from McCown to Bryce Petty, as crazy as that's going to sound to some. But in general, Bryce Petty scares the daylights out of me. You look at the Jets offense, 4.4 yards per play Sunday against New Orleans. The other thing here is you're going to want to monitor the Chargers' defensive injuries, which we talked about earlier in the show. When you play a 3-4 defense and you have your nose tackle potentially out, who's your run stopper, that's big. It doesn't look like Denzel Perryman has a chance to play. That was a knee injury. He was carted off. Wilson was in and out of the lineup the rest of the game. But again, if you have your core of your defense, your nose tackle, your middle linebacker, your strong safety out for this game, That could be pretty big as well. The Chargers really aren't a team that I don't think is going to go on the road and blow anybody out. But yeah, tough to get me to back Bryce Petty here. Who's the other defensive lineman there who was sent home
for the Jets?
Did not travel this past
week.
Believe
it was Muhammad Wilkerson.
Yeah,
right?
Muhammad Wilkerson. Yeah, he should be a go this week.
You mentioned must win, and this is an interesting game that I think I don't think will get a lot of national attention. But the Rams go on the road to Nashville to take on the Titans. Look ahead number here for this game. Payne had the Rams pegged as a 3-point favorite. The Titans stubbed their toe not once but twice on this West Coast swing. As you mentioned, San Francisco marches the length of the field to get that game-winning field goal from Robbie Gould. Number here ballooned out to 7. You immediately saw resistance taking this number down to 6.5. And I know I have a strong contingent of Nashville-based listeners that are diehard Titans fans who said, oh, you can't make this number big enough. I'm laying it with the Rams. Our secondary's terrible. But when a market compensates 3.5 points in a scenario, is this a good opportunity to maybe short some of that Rams stock traveling across the country despite having seen what this Rams team is capable of under Coach McVay's leadership this year?
That's the biggest thing. Let's see. It's another young team tasting success, but they still haven't won the division yet. And you'd think McVay, who's a goddamn wizard, is going to have some success in the passing game here against an abysmal Titan secondary. That all said, you know, and also the Titans are traveling back from the West Coast. So the travel here is a similar situation. It's not like, you know, the Rams are traveling to the East Coast and the Titans were just hanging out back on the East Coast. There's some travel there as well. But 7 is a ton to lay on the road against a Titan team that should be fully engaged, you would think, right? I mean, they're still in the hunt for the playoffs. And Tennessee should have some success running the ball here, and that's what they like to do. So 7 was a big number.
When we look at Christmas Day, it's the Steelers and Texans. We've seen this number correct itself a little bit. Look ahead had the Steelers pegged as 8-point favorites, and that was with Antonio Brown in the lineup. Obviously, the Texans go out and piss themselves in the loss against Jacksonville, getting absolutely crushed. Market moves towards 11 at betonline.ag, but you see it snap back pretty quickly to 10. I mean, is this a prime letdown spot for Pittsburgh? Do you have the confidence to back the Houston Texans? Interesting dynamics, knowing sometimes when you play on these holidays, it can often favor the road team.
Yes. You look at Pittsburgh's schedule, though. Is this the week it finally catches up?
Right. Remember they played 97 primetime games in a row or so, it feels like?
Yeah, and you had to battle back against Cincinnati on Monday Night Football, where you're down 17-0. You did it again on a short week against a physical Baltimore team where you had to battle back. And then this was an all-in effort for the Patriots game. You're going to be without Antonio Brown, who we alluded to is worth at least 1 point to the spread. And the game opens 3 points higher than the look-ahead. I know the Texans are horrible, but man, there wasn't a shot in hell that this was, that 11 was going to last. The question here becomes is, you know, Hayden was really close to playing this week. Maybe he's closer next week. But the Steelers have had this thing about them all year and really under Tomlin. If it's not a big game on the schedule or a team that they feel is going to strike fear in them, they usually do just enough to get it done. We usually don't see the most focused Steelers team in spots like this.
I mean, we've seen it on Sunday Night Football not once but twice in a road win at the Colts, the home game against the Packers. I mean, it's road Steelers. This is a prime spot for road Steelers to show up and win by a field goal.
It's certainly a not a great matchup for the Texans, and the Texans appears to have thrown in the towel, and that was a bad matchup against the Jaguars. And once you get down, it's tough to play catch-up football against the Jaguars, how they're built. But certainly 11's not going to last. And I would think that this has potential even as a standalone on Christmas. That's going to be the interesting part about this line. So this is going to be your pros versus Joes, obviously. And we're going to see early pro money on the Texans. But what is the book going to have to do to this game? That'll be interesting.
Does BetOnline.ag send out a lot of Christmas gifts? So are they going to have more recreational money starting to filter in? I mean, do you feel like when people look in their stockings, they're going to be like, oh, I got a Bitcoin bonus I'm going to deposit right in the book?
Just so you can bet the Steelers.
Yeah, just so you can bet the Steelers. Double up, baby.
This will be interesting to see where this... Okay, so it's the afternoon game. You still have the late game that night, right? Oakland-Philly?
Yeah, you got a game on NBC to kick things off at 4:30 okay. Eastern, and then you do have the night game between Oakland and Philadelphia.
Okay. That'll be interesting to see what that line does. So, I mean, it's not even divulging anything. The pros are going to be on the Texans here. It's just a matter of where this number goes. That will be fun to monitor. There is some 9.5 already in the market. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the kind of thing, if it's 9.5, I'm not running to bet it right now. Wait for this thing to pop back up. I think it's a similar scenario to what we're seeing unfold on tonight's game between the Bucs and Falcons that we'll cover in just a matter of minutes. All right, Payne, we've gone through some of the look-ahead numbers, and as our listeners know, Big Game Breakdown comes the courtesy of the American Gaming Association, the American Sports Betting Coalition. But before we get there, we have a review and a return of Movie Monday, voted on by you, the listeners, sent us to Disaster Artist, and I'm going to give you the floor to start this one off.
Setting me up, huh?
Well, I mean, I want to see where you go. I mean, I saw it late last night after I watched the Cowboys and Raiders game unfold. So I have some pretty strong thoughts, but, you know, I can either agree or disagree, and we haven't compared notes before. So I'm interested to get your take.
Well, the listeners led us astray. The title says it all. This movie was a disaster. Now, I know lots of West Coast folks are in the movie business, and they'll love the hell out of this film. It was just dripping with artistic integrity, man. It was a great movie. It's not for anybody else, in my opinion. The cast is great. The acting is awesome. James Franco is a beast. That dude's like quickly becoming one of my favorite actors. But the movie wasn't very good, and it's certainly not worth your time this time of year.
Wow. I'm going to have to disagree completely.
Yeah, you're a West Coast guy, and you got friends and family in the movie business.
I'm a West Coast guy. Here we go. I do have friends and family in the movie business.
It's dripping with artistic integrity, man.
That is true. James Franco absolutely crushes the role, first and foremost. So I'm glad we agree there. But I thought this movie was pretty entertaining. I mean, it was what it was. When you look at, you know, some of the struggles that actors and everybody in that industry go through, I thought the movie was pretty funny, made light of the whole situation. I have not watched the original, though, that this movie was based on.
Me either.
I wasn't sure if you dug that up. May have to try and see if it's available through Netflix or one of the other channels. But I actually thought it was definitely a worthwhile watch. I thought it was very good, entertaining. The movie kind of flew by. I mean, nothing earth-shattering by any stretch of the imagination.
Flew by.
Yeah, I thought it flew by.
Ooh.
And normally we are on the same page for a lot of these movies. I mean, we go, we absolutely hated it. No, we both kind of loved it. First time all season, I think we're diametrically opposed, where you hated the movie and wouldn't recommend it, where I think it is definitely a worthwhile watch. And people, if you're looking to kill, you know, 90 minutes, 2 hours before that big holiday swell of support comes out for some of these new movies on like December 22nd, you're not into Star Wars. I think this is definitely worth the watch.
Ooh, man. Again, fantastic.
And I'm not a
fantastic
James Franco
guy. Oh, I know. You got to see the Christmas movie there that came out last year. It's hilarious.
What's the name of that
one? I think
it's
called Why Him.
Why Him? Okay, that's right. Yeah, where he gets the full back tattoo with
This is Happy Holidays on it.
Yeah.
James Franco is fantastic in this. There's a lot of great acting in it. The cast was phenomenal. It's just it wasn't for me. Now, I'm sure, what was the preparation for this movie? Did you have like a nice little alfalfa sprout dinner, went in with your green juice smoothie, and you were
No, I watched David Carr fumble through the end zone. I tried to figure out exactly what the day was going to look like for the sports books. Did a little Sunday night radio and wanted to veg out in something non-sports related. There was no alfalfa. There was no green juice. There was no vegan cookies, anything along those lines to get myself in the right mindset to go watch it.
That's an indie film right there. That's, yeah.
Yeah, see, I actually went in not knowing what to expect, and I was pleasantly surprised. Well, you were not pleasantly surprised. You were pleasantly disappointed.
I went in giving it an open mind, and then I left saying, man, that's a great title. Just drop the artist off.
Wow. I mean, if you had to pick between this and Blade Runner 2049, which way are you going? I mean, was it that bad for you?
It depends if I'm looking to take a nap or not.
Well, I mean, if you're looking to take a nap, Blade Runner obviously gets the cake because it's 2.5 hours.
It's
so you don't have to worry about the ushers interrupting your sleep.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours, which is brutal. I would probably have to see this one, Disaster Artist, over Blade Runner.
I mean, wow. I did.
This was
not
a quicker
expect,
movie, which I liked in and out.
I did not expect that review from you. Well, you know what? We'll have to figure out what we're going to try and recommend this week. I mean, I know the holiday schedule a little bit tougher. Actually, you know what? I take that back. This may be our last movie Monday. No more Monday podcast the remainder of this NFL season.
That's right.
So we may have to try and see. Incorporate Wonder in
the
playoffs.
You're off the hook. I thought you were going to try to mandate a Monday podcast.
No, I was not going to mandate a Monday podcast. I mean, I figure all you Gentiles will be happily celebrating Christmas, doing what you do, drink eggnog, waiting for Santa, putting out your Christmas cookies.
I appreciate that. What a guy.
A week from today. You know, the rest of the world that doesn't celebrate Christmas, you know, life goes on for us.
What does that look like? You getting 12 presents? Is that how many days there is?
No, I mean,
Is it 12 days?
No, it's not 12 days.
How many
days
is it?
12 days of Christmas, you insensitive asshole.
Oh, that's right. How many days is it?
8 days. 8 days of Hanukkah.
Okay.
And, I mean, as a child, I got 8 presents.
That's
crazy. You get 7 smaller ones, and you get 1 larger gift. Oh, bullshit. I look at the bounty that my friends got for Christmas. They get, like, 15 gifts all at once.
You must be hanging out with a bunch of rich kids because I don't get 15 gifts. 8 is a lot of gifts.
I mean, we don't do gifts now at all. I mean, I'm not part of a gift-giving family by any stretch. I mean, Christmas was important because it was my mom's birthday, so we made contributions there. But, you know, I'm not big into the holiday gift-giving. I don't feel like I got to go through a whole laundry list and, you know, ship them to people I haven't talked to in forever.
Yeah.
I know it's a different tune, though. You're much better about that with your closest family.
When you get older, it doesn't mean as much. You're right. But, yeah, I still got to give a gift or two. To everyone in the family.
You know, makes you a better man than I am. So, you know, what can I say?
I don't think that was debatable.
I mean, we do have a number of interesting movies coming out, Payne. I figured you'd want to do a full breakdown of Pitch Perfect 3 when it debuts in theaters 4 days from now.
I don't know what that is, but what are the movies that are out right now?
What am I looking at? I mean,
isn't there supposed to be some good ones coming?
I mean, you got Jumanji with The Rock coming out on December 20th. Huh?
The first one was awesome. The original,
yeah,
Robin Williams.
You also had Robin Williams, so significantly upgraded there.
Yeah.
The Greatest Showman, which I think is about P.T. Barnum. I haven't watched a trailer, don't know. That comes out on December 20th. You got The Darkest Hour about Winston Churchill and a good old war movie, which we seem to do quite a few of on this podcast. I mean, the acting reviews there have been tremendous. You got Downsizing with Matthew Damon, where I think it's Honey, I Shrunk the Kids for adults.
Looks horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's going to get there. Father Figures, you get a cameo from some NFL stars and Jim Brown and Terry Bradshaw.
Ooh.
Pitch Perfect, as I mentioned. Shape of Water, highly acclaimed, but I think that might be a little too artistic for you.
Oh, nice little jab there. Like it. Getting even.
And I'm trying to look at what else there is. I mean, apparently I'm seeing other movies like, you know, throwbacks thrown up here. Like you can go see Gremlins, the original that opens up on, you know, December 23rd.
What a great movie. You know,
for all the holiday-centric folks. Speaking of Gremlins, can you explain something to me in that plot line? I've never been able quite to figure it out.
I haven't watched it in years. I was young when I loved it.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's... I mean, when they say you can't feed a gremlin after midnight, what does that mean? You can't feed the gremlin like midnight to 5? You know, what's that window look like?
I don't know. I don't remember. There probably had to be a timeline in there now.
No, they don't really break it down in the movie. I'm disappointed. I mean, I feel like that's something Phoebe Cates should have dove into in that plot.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, that would have been key. Maybe like when the sun rises. Maybe that's what
it is.
And you just didn't watch
it
close enough.
Like if it was, I mean, that makes a little more sense. I mean, you guys have Christmas movie tradition out over there in that Payne household?
Yeah. Home Alone is a good one. That's usually, I think that's everybody's though. And then Christmas Vacation, obviously. Those are the two.
I wasn't sure if you guys got into the heat. It is Die Hard, a Christmas movie, yes or no type stuff out there.
No. It's Home Alone. It's Christmas Vacation. We're basic.
Okay. I wasn't sure what was able to crack the docket. I mean, you do have the Hawaii Bowl between Fresno State and Houston. I mean, ooh, you roll that into your slate of NBA action, two NFL games. I wasn't sure if there was time for movies, or maybe you're going to have to watch on the iPad if you get outvoted.
Oh, I'll definitely be outvoted. Definitely be outvoted. This new paperweight I have, though, I can stream some stuff on it.
This new paperweight. Not going to give it up. Not going to give it up on the sheer enjoyment that comes from operating a MacBook Air.
It's all convenience. I got the Apple phone. It's convenience. I got the MacBook Air, I think about a year ago. It's a fantastic paperweight. You can't do any heavy lifting on it. You surf the web. You do some email stuff. You stream some stuff. That's about it. Maybe watch a movie when you're in flight. But you can't do any heavy lifting on those things.
Yeah, I mean, I can't get my text messages to interface with it right now. So it's really put a crimp in my style.
But, very overpriced for
specs. That's about the extent of it. So movie review Monday. Depends who you trust. I feel like this is an episode of Seinfeld. I mean, do you want a Gene's pick? Or, you know, who are some of the other ones that rated the movies?
Ooh, I don't know. That's bad. Usually I'm the Seinfeld guy, but I'm not
quite
sure.
Yeah, you're supposed to be my Seinfeld guy. And you want to be my latex salesman.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a brain fart.
One more piece of business to transact here on the Bet the Board podcast. The Big Game Breakdown, courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition, that aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver all things sports betting legalization. For more information, go to sportsbettinginamerica.com. What a doozy we have tonight. It's the Atlanta Falcons on the highway, laying 6.5 minus $1.20 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, playing out the stretch. Total in this game, 48.5 at betonline.ag. The Falcons, winners of 4 out of 5, peaking at the right time of the season. Their lone loss, 14-9 to the Vikings. Is this number where it needs to be to try and get a little professional money on the dog?
Oof. So here's kind of the background.
That sounded like a ringing endorsement if I've ever heard one.
Here's kind of the background on this. So I go through, do my weekly work, kind of circle some leans, and then I go back in and dig in. So the Buccaneers were initially on the lean list, ended up using them in some contest. And man, the more I dug in, it's ugly. There, and you won't notice by looking at the screen, but there was one group that came in early in the week and nibbled some Buccaneers. I didn't agree with the timing of that, looking at the bet splits in this game.
It did feel odd.
Yes. And now we're seeing the public really push this game out to the key number of 7. There's also been, from what I've been told, not as much love for the Buccaneers from the guys that had already bet it. So when you look at this matchup, and some of the issues the Falcons offense has had, you start to question whether they'll have those same issues against the Buccaneers secondary. And it is one of the worst secondaries in all of the NFL. They allow 50% of passes to grade successful. It looks like Vernon Hargraves is not going to be able to play in this game. When you talk about having an average run stop defense for the Buccaneers, that likely gets worse with Lavonte David officially out for this game. I know reports of Gerald McCoy missing this game are 50-50 at this point. You know, a lot of people have said he's out. He's trying to play. Let's see if he gives it a go. Even if he does, he's going to be a shell of himself with a torn bicep. So Atlanta should have some success on the ground as well. I don't
sounds
know.
Like you're,
where,
sounds like you're making a compelling case for the dog right about now.
No, I'm not. I was trying to get myself on the dog, and I'm not going to be able to. Now, certainly, I'm not laying 7 on the road in a primetime game with the Falcons. But, you know, some of these. Here's the thing. This is going to have the balloon factor. This is what makes this game so tough. Because if the Buccaneers come out with energy and effort, they can hang around in this ballgame. But if you get punched in the mouth early and Jameis continues his propensity to turn the ball over, this has the snowball effect where this game could really balloon out. So you like some of the advantages that potentially the Buccaneers have. Again, as bad as Jameis Winston has been, and he's missed some games, so you've had a backup quarterback contributing to some of these numbers, but the Buccaneers are still 6th in passing success rate offense. The problem is Jameis Winston just continues to turn the ball over. You throw in the film again last week against the Lions, and the throws are just like head-scratching. Darius Slay's interception last week, like who is he throwing the ball to? O.J. Howard, he tries to target him later on in the game. The ball's not even remotely close. He gets stripped because he's treating the ball like a loaf of bread. So the problem here is they could
better
have
than
some...
Better treating him like a pound of crab legs.
There you go. Zinger. Woo.
Not very good one, but, you know, continue.
So I just, you know, this has the potential to snowball here with turnovers. Now, if Jameis decides this is going to be a game where he's going to cherish the football, they have a shot to be in this game. That's the reality of the situation. But with those,
I mean, he's come out and said the right things about how important it is for him to close out the season against 3 division opponents.
Yep.
About how their record wouldn't look as bad if they finished 7-9 instead of double digits and losses. I mean, but you've been as big a detractor of Jameis as anybody, Payne, saying you weren't sure he was going to be that guy. I mean, do we think he can still lead this team and get them to 2-1 or 3-0 or even a 1-2 finish?
That's interesting, huh? It's a Florida State guy, not going to battle for the Florida State guy.
Well, no one's ever accused you, and I will say this, for as much as I bust your balls of being a, you know, glass half full guy or sugarcoating things, and I think that's why a lot of people respect your honesty and integrity when it comes to breaking these things down on the podcast.
Yeah. It would be nice. I don't think from an organization perspective, and listen, like you, these are professionals. You don't want to go out there and throw games away. But if I'm the GM, I'm hoping they lose out. Obviously, it makes my job easier in terms of drafting and getting more talent in here. But for these guys, you know, they're going to want to go out on a good note. Certainly, I think Dirk Cutter's playing for his job here a little bit. He's not that dude. He's not that guy. I don't feel bad saying that because he's not a great human being in general. But there's clearly they're butting heads here. And this is so tough because you don't ever want to tell your quarterback. And if you watched Hard Knocks earlier on in the year, he's basically telling Jameis to not take these shots. And it's tough when you have a young quarterback telling him not to be aggressive. That's not the message you want to send. I get it because he turns the ball over a lot, but they're butting heads there. You have to have some type of controlled aggression, and so far, Jameis doesn't appear to have that. It's one speed, so he's got to limit those turnovers. But when you look at what Dirk Cutter's doing, they're butting heads there. That hasn't been a fantastic relationship. We'll see how things play out. They should have an ability here to move the ball a little bit. I know we've made mention of Atlanta's improvements defensively. Part of that was due to the schedule when they started playing tougher opponents recently. They weren't that great. Certainly Alvin Kamara going out early in the Thursday night game helped things. He's a matchup nightmare. Oh, man, this is tough for me. You do have Tevin Coleman out here, so that should help the Bucs defense just a little bit. He's a different dynamic weapon from Freeman. But you look at this game, man, that Buccaneers defense is bad. I just don't know if we're going to have Jameis playing catch up if he's not going to be able to turn the ball over. And that's what's keeping me on the sidelines here.
When you look at the total here, we saw this thing open 47.5 out to 48.5 right now at betonline.ag. Real money on the over, or just public trying to find a interesting parlay or teaser leg that they want to try and include?
From what I have seen early in the week, there was some real money on the over. Now, will that stand when we get closer to kick? We'll see. You know, if you can buy down, if you have a cheap buy to 47, which is a key number, and potentially take some off the table going under 49.5, you know, that could make some sense here. But yeah, when you talk about the Tampa Bay's defensive injuries and a slew of guys being out on the defensive side of the ball and Atlanta having extra time to prep and some of those issues that they've had, you know, converting for touchdowns in the red zone. You look at the Buccaneers, how they've trended over the last 3-4 weeks. They're allowing 66% of red zone trips to end in touchdowns. So maybe Atlanta doesn't have those issues punching it in for touchdowns. So far from what I've seen, the over is real. Now, it is Monday Night Football, and certainly once you start hovering around the 50 mark, there is an old school adage that, hey, anything in the 50s, I'm going under. I don't ascribe to that, but there is a few groups that are old school that still do. So we'll see where this goes. I don't have a great feel for the game. One thing that's so interesting is I talked about, is when you look at this Bucs offense, you know, the passing success rate metrics look pretty good. There's just a lot of inconsistency there. Jameis hasn't always looked on the same page as his weapons, his wideouts. So the offense, even last week against the Lions, I know they hung 21. 14 was really late. They didn't do much for about three and a half quarters. That scares me. So there's not a lot of consistency there. I just can't make a case to play this game right now, especially how we rolled this weekend. I'm definitely going to limit some of my exposure, that's for certain.
To quote the great Kenny Rogers, sometimes you need to know when to hold them, sometimes you need to know when to fold them, and this appears like a game worth folding on. One last thing, Payne, before we close up shop here on this Monday morning.
Ooh.
If you're starting a franchise tomorrow,
okay,
can Jameis Winston be that guy to take you to the next step?
Depends who the coach is.
So you think it's all going to be directly tied to head coach if Jameis is going to be able to be that guy as a franchise quarterback and live up to that number one draft pick potential that we thought we saw in him coming out of Florida State?
Right. Look at all the quarterbacks right now. When you look and gauge the good ones, certainly there are generational talents like Brady and Rodgers. Well, you start to like tick down that list, and a lot of the success for some of these guys have to do with their coaching. Like even yesterday's game, like Goff to me didn't look great. He was very hesitant on some of his throws. I know Cooper Kupp dropped what could have been a touchdown on the second possession of that game, but you see Goff bailing out of the throw. He short arms it, and it's really low. Like, you know, Goff didn't have to do much yesterday. McVay is just so fantastic. Like if Jameis Winston has McVay, it's a completely different story. Right. It's just a completely different ball game. And I guess that's life, right? You get some guys get lucky opportunities. They're going to make the most of them. Seems to be what Goff is doing. If McVay was at Tampa, you probably think, or hell, even the Titans, you'd think it would be Mariota or Winston taking that next step. Unfortunately, neither Mariota or Winston have good coaches at this point. So let's see. Now, I'm also a proponent of drafting quarterbacks. So I think you definitely need to send a little message here. I don't know if there's anybody in free agency. I mean, certainly, I guess you classify Jimmy G as being a free agent, but you know, the 49ers can do everything they can to keep him. But there's not anybody really in free agency that you're going to make a massive play for or that you would dole out big dollars to replace Winston. But I do think you need to give him some competition and not, and when I mean competition, not what the Dolphins have been doing in the last few years, like, oh, we're going to get an undrafted guy or we're going to draft a guy late. Really give them some competition, you know, draft a second round quarterback or draft a third round quarterback that's at least competent enough to where Jameis sees at practice like, oh, this guy's making some throws. This guy's at least capable.
Yeah, I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick or Griffin were those guys to really put the fear of God into him, so to speak, in terms of his overall job security. So either way, an interesting game to watch, but not a whole lot to wager on this evening. And Payne, I'm not sure where the time goes, man. It flies when you're having fun, and this is our final Monday podcast of the 2017 football season. I don't know, when do we add Mondays? We had that for the second season. I'm trying to think how long we've had those on the books.
Ooh. It wasn't the first year. I think it was the second season that we implemented the Mondays.
So three seasons of Monday podcasts officially signed, sealed, and delivered for our listeners' pleasure.
Yeah.
Amazing to think. What started as a brainchild continues to grow and blossom thanks to all of our loyal listeners who continue to subscribe on iTunes, favorite, retweet the podcast, offer up those great reviews, and buy that gear with limited supplies remaining for those holiday stocking stuffers for the gamblers in your life. Because you do know, 99.9% of the time, bettors wearing Bet the Board gear on game day are more likely to win their wagers. So any final words of wisdom, advice, you know, holiday recipes you'd like to share before we come back here on Thursday and do it all again?
we'll be back Thursday to break down these games. I start to trend. I probably haven't been drinking a lot this year, as our listeners know. But I like the trend come Christmas time into some white Russians. So maybe that's
very hot, very festive holiday atmosphere you're trying to create around the Payne household.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking forward to a couple white Russians this year.
We'll see what we can do. But as you guys know, NFL week 16 on the docket Thursday. We'll have an announcement also about our College Football Bowl podcast and when you can expect that as well. But for Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can find me there as well. Best of luck should you choose to get down on the Falcons-Bucks this evening. If not, a few days of R&R, some bowl games in your future. And we'll be right back here with you on Thursday to talk about all things NFL Week 16. Hopefully, in the meantime, we'll see you at the window.